You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, April the 17th. We will be talking with a psychologist this hour about the horrific shooting at Virginia Tech yesterday. Not a whole lot is known yet about the shooter, but university officials are saying this morning they believe he was a student there. We will talk about what could have motivated such an act, and we will also talk about how we all cope with tragic news on this scope in this hour this morning. And we will welcome your thoughts, your reactions, your questions. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. The news of the shooting yesterday prompted Congress late in the afternoon to postpone the hearings with Alberto Gonzalez that were scheduled for today before the Senate Judiciary Committee. We had been here on the Ideas Network planning on carrying those hearings and the Gonzalez testimony. That is not going to be happening, obviously. We will not be carrying NPR's live coverage of that today as planned. Our regularly scheduled talk shows will be coming your way, including some more talk shows with updates and perspectives on what is being called the worst case of mass murder, the worst mass shooting in American history. Kathleen Dunn, after 9 o'clock, has some guests to talk about this. Talk of the Nation, I'm sure, will be covering it, and At Issue with Ben Marins after 4 o'clock this afternoon. We will be talking about the psychological angle of this story, what could have been behind this mass shooting at Virginia Tech, and how we all cope with it. We heard President Bush in the news saying that our classrooms are supposed to be places of learning and a safe sanctuary, and when that sanctuary is violated, the impact is felt in every classroom, in every community across the country. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid said yesterday, when Congress observed a moment of silence about this, that a tragedy like this shakes us to our very core. So we'll get some help in coping with all of this with our guest. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We are happy to have with us Frank Farley, psychologist at Temple University. He is the former president of the American Psychological Association. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So, well, it's strange to say good morning, but tell me, I don't know, your first thoughts, your first reaction when you heard the news yesterday about this this mass shooting at Virginia Tech.
Here we go again.
Yeah. And you know what? That's the same thing I thought, too. Are we getting jaded, almost desensitized to this?
God, I don't know. It just struck me like sort of American Baghdad, you know? And, well, the research shows that extensive coverage of violence in the media and so on does, it really seems to have one of three effects, depending on the people. But one is it desensitizes us. Another one is it makes us afraid. And a third consequence of media depictions of violence is that it sometimes gives people ideas, you know, and potentiates yeah. violence in viewers. Those seem to be the three main effects. I don't know how this will come out. And undoubtedly, it will get enormous media attention through the years, you know, going forward.
Yeah. You know, I mean, when I first heard the news, it was, well, you know, because a lot of times in this business, you think about, well, what should we, you know, do some programming on yet another school shooting? And at first, we're thinking, well, we need more details, what exactly happened. And then it did turn out this wasn't, I hate to say this, but your run-of-the-mill school shooting. It did then turn into what is being called now the worst, you know, mass shooting in American history. This is the worst one we've ever had.
Yes. Yeah. That's right. You know, one angle though that is of interest, and of course we know so little, we know almost mm-hmm. nothing. But you know, the terrorist angle. Now most people seem to be dismissing that, And, you know, again, I don't know any more than anyone else, but I've often wondered when the second shoe is going to fall after 9/11. We've not had major terrorist activity since 9/11. And could it even remotely be something along those lines? If you want to terrorize a nation, strike at the youth, strike at the future of the country. Mm-hmm. Everybody has children or siblings or friends and so on is in college in this country. Colleges, you know, are the sort of the source of our future. And so if you wanted to really strike terror, which is the terrorist business, mm-hmm. you couldn't have picked a more effective way of doing it.
Well, yeah, no, certainly we don't know all of the details, but what we do know is that a young Asian male, I've seen age 19, I've seen age 24, is believed to have been the lone shooter, though that's even unclear whether the shootings at the dorm may have been committed by someone else, though I think most officials think it was the same person. Went on this rampage, 33 people total dead, including the gunman. What typically, though we don't know all the details, what typically sets someone off to do something like this?
Well, assuming that this is the single killer idea, and that it's not a terrorist effort in any way, and again, I'm speculating, but often it's frustration, it's feeling an injustice has been done. The person may be rejected for one thing or another, rejected in romance or rejected in school, or in some way fired from a job, whatever. And so they feel that there's this injustice has been done, and so they begin to think about retaliation. Revenge must be undertaken. And sometimes, and this can then lead often to a homicidal and suicidal rampage. About roughly 65% of these things end in suicide.
Mm-hmm.
So then they may begin thinking, well, what can they do to their perceived abusers?
Mm-hmm.
And then they may develop a plan. Guns, extra ammunition, in this case, chains for the doors.
Right.
And so they develop a plan, and then they will take out the retaliation against the main target, but they also may take out retaliation against, let's say, the institution that supports that person or is part of that person's life or in which that person is located. And they tend to blame everyone.
Yeah, and I need to take a quick weather break, and then we'll continue talking with Frank Farley. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 19 minutes past 7 o'clock now on this Tuesday, April the 17th. We are talking with psychologist Frank Farley during this hour. He is with Temple University, formerly with UW-Madison. He is the former president of the American Psychological Association, and he's helping us understand the possible motivations behind yesterday's mass shootings at Virginia Tech. 32 people were killed by a gunman who then killed himself. The heavily armed shooter was described as about 19 years old and Asian. The university officials are saying now that they believe he was indeed a student at the university. No word on the motive behind the killings as of yet, but we are talking with Frank Farley about what often is behind shootings like this. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. If you have a question about what happened yesterday and how the psychological aspects of what happened yesterday and how we're all coping with what happened yesterday, please give us a call. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We do have Rich and Sullivan on the line. Let me go to him first. Hi, Rich, you're on the air.
Hi. In my country, this happens with amazing frequency. It's cyclical. And to me, it is, at least. My country is the United States of America, and I'm an American. and I want to be proud of my country. But we have a reputation in the world that these kinds of things happen here more often than they may happen elsewhere. I think there also is in our media a tendency to say this is aberrant behavior, and in a certain sense it is. But it is so aberrant. There's also a tendency to hurry into saying, but we're all okay as a civilization. America is not really like this. I think we would do well to pay attention to any of our leaders or any of our candidates to become leaders who say to us in the wake of this tragedy, as Barack Obama did yesterday in Milwaukee, we really need to take a much closer look at how this society is put together, how much we are entertained by violence, how much more we accept it than being entertained by sex. The no-no in American entertainment culture is sex, but violence is everywhere because it is sexy. And I also think that I don't know how to connect it, perhaps your guests can, but this is a very, very lonely culture. I mean, the idea that people will frequently say, we didn't know who this was, we knew he lived in the apartment complex or whatever, and I go back to bowling alone as an icon for that study of American behavior as a sort of strange characterization of who we are as a people and how much we need to look to one another, not just to the perpetrator of a crime, but to who we are as a people and what we're willing to do about such occurrences.
Yeah, and Rich, I appreciate your thoughts. Lots of good ones there for us to talk about, Frank Farley.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That was a lot of points there, Rich. We are pretty violent. That's got to be connected, at least in part, to the gun culture historically in this country. I'm originally from Canada. I grew up there. Philadelphia, if I've got my statistics right, Philadelphia, the city I live in, has more homicides per year than all of Canada together, mm-hmm. the whole country. And Canada has some degree of gun control. It's not extensive, but they do have gun registration and certain aspects of gun control. So to me, that's one thing. Violence in the media is an enormous problem. And I already outlined, you know, three of the ways mm-hmm. that violence in the media can impact all of us. And we do need to get some control over violence in the media. You know, we influence our schools through school boards. How do we influence the media? We now know that kids spend as much or more time every week either watching TV or on the internet than they spend in school. So we've got a mechanism for influencing the school as citizens, that is the school boards and PTAs and PTOs. But how do we influence the media? And yes, you can say, well, parents should be on top of it all the time, knowing exactly what their kids are doing and so on, and monitoring and supervising and influencing. And yes, that's all true. But let me also point out a trend in the American family, which we're all aware of, which is the trend towards single-parent families is moving rapidly. Some people project that the next census in 2010, the two-parent family will become the minority family in America, the minority family structure. It's getting very difficult to say for a single parent who's trying to have a job and keep the family together and so on to be able to do this monitoring of their kids that everybody says they should be doing. So we got a lot of problems out there. Here's one thing that really concerns me. It's my understanding that approximately 25% of all the people imprisoned in the world are imprisoned in the United States. So we've got just endless problems, and some of those people are innocent, and that distorts the whole judicial process. And so lonely culture, on that point, I'm not certain I would agree with Rich. I'm not certain we're really that much of a lonely culture. It could be argued we're kind of a gregarious culture. You know, we tending toward the more extroverted, gregarious kind of social side of human nature. I'm not certain that we're so lonely. But, you know, one of the things about these kinds of mass murders is when they get profiled by, you know, the FBI profiler types, loneliness is one of the things that keeps coming up over and over again. They tend to be lonely people. So it may be that the lonely among us are involved in this kind of thing, but I'm not certain that we can be characterized as a lonely culture.
Yeah. Rich, thanks a lot. Other callers who have been waiting, Mark in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. I've got four kids in college, and late last night, a little after 10, we were almost asleep, and my son called, and he said, "Dad, sorry, forgot to call you earlier in the day. I just wanted to let you know that I'm safe." So I said, "Yeah, thanks. We're going to bed. Good night. I'm glad you called." And I hung up, and I thought, the only way as a parent that I can feel any sort of safety for my kids is to be as cold as the rest of society and think it's a numbers game and it can't happen to my kids. Or if they go to the mall, there's so many people traveling, it can't happen to one of them, someone that I'm close to. I think the solutions to all of these related problems died 40 or 50 years ago or started dying. You can't lock down the schools. You're not going to take guns away. This whole problem that started cascading started many, many, many years ago in the middle of the last century, and it's only going to keep getting worse, and it's a numbers game, and that's how I cope with feeling somewhat safer than I probably am. I'm going to hang up and listen to your response.
Give me a little bit of a shiver to think about that. That's might be the only way you can cope. I don't know. What do you think, Professor Farley?
Well, I don't know. I guess I fall down on the side of warmness and getting engaged in it. And I happen to think we can come up with solutions. This is a can-do culture. If I was asked to characterize America in maybe a phrase, it would be that this is an inventive country that is creative, inventive, and reinvents itself. And I think we can ultimately come to some degree of solutions to some of these problems. We won't solve all of them, but you know, I'm concerned that we're not really getting into the nitty-gritty as it is. I think that gun control is an issue, and that we do have to deal with that in some degree, as they have in Canada, as they have in Great Britain and many other first-world nations. So that's a starting point. I'm optimistic about the future. We've heard for generations that, you know, we've got intractable problems, but, you know, we keep on ticking and we keep working on the problems. And I don't want to give up on them.
We will continue talking about possible solutions and other issues related to the shooting yesterday at Virginia Tech. Our guest, Frank Farley, psychologist at Temple University, 1-800-642-1234 or 263-1890. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine at 7:36 on this Tuesday, April the 17th. We're talking about the shootings yesterday at Virginia Tech and wondering why such a thing could have happened and what's behind what could have happened, what could have been behind what happened, and how we're all coping with the news that there was the worst shooting rampage in U.S. history yesterday at Virginia Tech University. 33 people total dead, including the shooter. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We are trying to look for some answers this morning with Frank Farley, psychologist at Temple University, former president of the American Psychological Association. And we, again, welcoming your reactions, your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Got a caller over the news, Professor Farley, who was, I guess, irritated that he heard on NPR, and he heard me say it too, that why mention that the shooter was Asian? I guess it's because that's what he was described as being. Typically, these shooters, though, are white males, aren't they?
Typically, yep, that's true, and they're typically males. About 95% are males, and
And also, again, you're not some sort of criminal expert here, but what kind of gun did he use to kill so many people so quickly? An emailer wants to know. And the police aren't officially saying what the guns were. They did recover two handguns while at a news conference. A police spokesperson didn't say what kinds of guns they were. The media reports are saying they're 9mm semi-automatic pistols. So something that already we are hearing, Professor Farley, gun control people and people who think concealed carry should be legal, that you should have guns on a campus. So we're already hearing that debate.
Well, there's a great idea. You're terrific. Then we'll have shootout at OK Corral on American campuses. I don't think so. I don't think that's a particularly good idea.
Carl in Madison has been waiting. Hi, Carl. You're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Frank is Carl.
Hi, Carl.
Hey, listen, you know, I listened as these reports came in and the death toll kept rising and rising yesterday, and I don't know. I'm not trying to minimize it, what happened yesterday. It's a horrific tragedy, but I just have to give my own reaction, and that it was that this country is what, one-seventh the population? I mean, seven times the population of Iraq, and the total number of dead yesterday was less than half, or you know, a quarter of what usually happens every day in Iraq. And it sort of put it into perspective how horrific it is to go through what those people are going through there.
Yes, Carl, but you know, I guess my feeling would be that this is at home. And it's human nature. This is happening in our own home, and so naturally we're going to react dramatically to it. And but you know, obviously, and you would certainly agree with this. We don't want what's happening in Iraq either. You know, I mean, we've got a problem of human violence that seems to be intractable. When it comes home, hopefully it will motivate some people to deal with it more than they have in the past.
Yeah. I wonder, Professor Farley, again, we're speculating here. I am with this question, but while the shooter was described as being an Asian male, and now the university has confirmed that he was a student who was living in one of the dorms on campus, there have also been reports, and again, these are not confirmed by the university yet, that this was an exchange student from China, someone who presumably did not grow up in our violent culture here in this country. Does that make any difference in how we assess this situation, if that were the case?
I don't think it wouldn't. I don't think for me. I mean, I think we should just focus on the facts, you know, and what actually happened. Sometimes kids away from home kind of lose their way, and sometimes kind of lose perspective. I'm thinking of a horrific series of murders that were connected to Madison, in fact. They took place at the University of Iowa in 1991. Ann Cleary, who used to be my colleague in Madison in the Department of Educational Psychology there, the University of Wisconsin-Madison, Ann Cleary was killed. Five others were killed by, a Chinese exchange student who I gather had failed, I think, his dissertation. I think he had failed his either final oral exam or his dissertation, and killed six people, including my old and dear friend Ann Cleary, who had spent many years on the faculty in Madison. But I don't think it's I don't think there's anything. It's actually very unusual. statistically to find, let's say, Asians or Asian Americans associated with such crimes.
Mm-hmm.
That's very unusual, and I'm not certain there's anything there, if you know what I mean, to pursue the, maybe the foreign student angle. I don't know. But, you know, whether, for example, a student so far from home, et cetera, sort of can lose their perspective, lose their way, get lonely, whatever, and there may be possibly some distortions in their in their feelings, their emotions, their motivations, and whatnot. But we certainly don't know yet in this case.
I'm wondering, too, if we should be, I don't know, worried that this is going to happen somewhere else sometime soon.
That worries me. Mm-hmm. That does. You know, I mean, the copycat. That's a term that makes sense. And what you have here is, you know, according to the press and most statistics I'm aware of, the most heinous shooting on a campus in the history of America. And is there anybody out there who'd want to top that?
Yeah. Connie in Mabel, Minnesota. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for having your guest on. I wanted to make mention of the previous caller who said that we have a lonely culture. And I think as much as I believe that that might be right, I think that's only part of it. I mean, I think we are lonely in that we are doing so many things alone, in that what your guest referred to earlier is a lot of single-parent households. Myself, as an example, I am a mother of three children doing it alone, two of which are teenagers. Now, they spend a lot of time on the Internet, and it concerns me greatly that I can't be on top of that computer, you know, for every moment that they are on the computer. But the caller that said lonely plus exhausted. I mean, we, these single parents, come home from work, and it's just like dragging a lead brick to just move and think. And I feel guilty about it. I mean, I see what's happening. I want to fix it, and I feel helpless. So I'll take my comments off here. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. My thoughts about that, about the loneliness thing, again, I'm not certain that we are so lonely. We tend to be a gregarious culture, and I'm not certain that we are exceptionally lonely. But the exhausted part, I can see that. The changing demographics of the American family are making it, I think, increasingly difficult to parent. And I think it places more weight on forces outside of the family. I think the schools have got to pick up more of the slack than they have. Kids are in school more hours per day than they spend with their parents, by far. And so I think the schools need to maybe pick up some extra responsibility on the psychological side. You know, maybe we need more training in psychology for our teachers and our staff and personnel in the schools to be able to spot problems as they arise, to deal with them more effectively. We need more school psychologists out there. And so, you know, I think we're going through some big transitions in our society. You know, if you turn the clock back to the 1950s and then come back to today, I mean, my gosh, it's like, to some extent, a different world. And we need to adapt to that. And the schools is one of the solid institutions that are in the lives of kids, and I think we need to do more there.
We're talking with Frank Farley, who is a psychologist at Temple University. We're talking about the shootings yesterday at Virginia Tech University. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 13 minutes before 8 o'clock. Coming up after 8, we'll welcome in the author of The Occupation of Iraq, Winning the War, Losing the Peace. He's a advisor to the Iraqi Prime Minister, the author of this book, and you'll hear from him after 8 o'clock. Our next caller, Anthony in Oregon. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I have kind of a rhetorical question, but if you want to have any kind of answer, that's fine, and then also a comment. The question is, why is it that let us ponder and assume the position of the thinker. Why is it that people don't look at these things like, you know, Columbine and this most recent run or whatever? They don't look at it and learn a lesson or take away from it some moral, as if it were just a film. You know, if they go watch what's a good movie that everybody loved?
I don't know.
Just some movie like that recent one that about global warming that everybody was talking about, and they feel like it's, you know, that one, whatever it's called.
An Inconvenient Truth.
Mm-hmm. That's the one. Anyway, so why don't they look at this and learn morals? You know, everybody's talking about, all the callers previously were talking about the culture is so lonely, and your guest is saying, well, the culture's not lonely. Well, whatever the culture is, this guy was lonely. And the moral of the story, really, in my opinion anyway, is when you deal with someone who's lonely like this, you don't just shrug him off and make him more lonely and more frustrated. I mean, I've known people online. You know, I spent some time chatting in forums, and I've known people who kind of act this way, act really antisocial. And I know I personally go out of my way not to make them feel worse, whereas everybody else in the forum is, you know, giving them a cold shoulder, even calling them names, stuff like this. I'm trying to make that person feel like, okay, you know, you are having a bad time. I'm not going to just let you be a jerk, but you're welcome to, you know, to purge your bad feelings and then join us later.
Yeah. So that's the moral to the story for Anthony. Professor Farley, what do you think?
Well, on the first point about seeing these things and learning from them, I think we do learn something from them. Gosh, I hope we do. Columbine, the Red Lake Massacre up in Minnesota in 2005, you know, I think it to some extent raises our antenna, makes us a bit more sensitive to these sorts of things, but the process is incredibly slow, and progress seems kind of elusive. The on the idea of the loneliness and the online antisocial kinds of behavior, sometimes called flaming, and you get a lot of that. Often it's associated with anonymity, and that should be of concern to all of us. You know, we don't know enough about what young people are doing online, but it's a smorgasbord of everything. Witness the pornography that arose out of American Idol and Antonella Barba, for example, and so it's a smorgasbord of everything out there. And again, it's very hard for parents, and particularly the single parent, I think, to stay on top of all of this. So, in a nutshell, we got a lot of work to do in this society. You know, what influence do we have over the Internet and to expression via the Internet? Right now, we're not doing a very good job there. And, you know, you can go to YouTube and see beatings that have been videotaped, etc. So we have an enormous task given the changes in the whole information society going forward.
Yeah. Thank you, Anthony. Anne and Madison, hello, you're on the air.
Hi, I agree with some of your previous callers. I think we're a very lonely society. If you walk around Madison, you won't see anybody on the streets, for instance. That's not true in other countries. We're also, I think, there's a war
You won't see anybody on the streets if you walk?
Well, you see people downtown, if you're downtown. But if you walk, I mean, just take a walk on a Saturday afternoon from the west side almost to the east side, people are not outside in their yards socializing. The children aren't outside playing. And this wasn't true many years ago, and it's not true of other countries. But I think really this issue needs to be talked about from a gun control point of view. I think the assault weapons ban was allowed to expire. The Bush administration listens to the NRA and listens to great big corporate heads who are waging a financial war against.
We lost you, Anne. I don't know why. Sorry about that. Do you want to react to her comments, Professor Farley?
Well, I'd like to say something about the sociability side. Yeah, there is that. But again, I still don't see that we're such an isolated, lonely people. I don't think that's a correct diagnosis. And the idea that, say, European nations, my gosh, I lived in Europe for years, and, you know, the British, I mean, they're famous for, you know, not talking to each other until they've been introduced, etc. So I'm not certain that we are so socially isolated in this country. In terms of assault weapons ban, etc., I think we need to do something. We have to get serious about weapons in America. And, you know, we keep going over and over again about that. I remember once when I was a professor in Madison, there was talk about a gun control ban in the city, that it would be a model for the country. And the mayor was talking about it, and he invited myself and Leonard Berkowitz, who was a great, one of the world's great psychologists and was then on the faculty, to meet and talk about that sort of thing. Well, it didn't get anywhere. A model gun ban. I don't know what's happened since, but it didn't get anywhere when I was there. And we have to do something about gun control in some form or other that's much better than we have today.
Yeah, Karen Prager, my producer, looked up on the internet some statistics, I think in reaction to a comment you had made earlier, Professor Farley. Philadelphia had 100 killings in the first 3 months of the year. I don't know if it's this year or last, while Canada had total in the entire year 168. So your city has more murders and killings than the entire country of Canada.
Don't forget, this is the city of brotherly love, I want to point out.
Yeah, it is now the murder capital of the world, I believe, was the dub I heard. Jan in Delafield, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm incensed by Professor Farley's references to a gun culture and Wild West shootouts. A shootout is just what was needed in that schoolroom. All three of our children were sent off to school with the abilities to have shot that man dead from 50 feet. But they all went to schools that had the prohibited guns, making them victim-rich, gun-free school zones. There are some 200 million guns in the U.S., less than one out of six, something like 1/16/10,000 of 1% are illegally used, while hundreds of thousands, according to the FBI, are used in legitimate self-defense every year, and I've had enough of this.
Well, he hung up. So anyway, there's somebody who believes that if the student body and or the faculty had the ability to have a concealed weapon, that this shooter wouldn't have killed so many people, Professor Farley.
Well, he would have been killed by the students, and some of them would have been killed, and there would just been a lot of killings, and arming the citizenry, everybody carrying a concealed weapon is absolutely not the solution, and there's no, you know, scientific evidence to support it. The best thing, in my view, again, is to look at other nations that have share similar background to us, similar demographics to us, but have some degree of control over weaponry, and take a look at their death by gun homicide, and as you just mentioned, Canada being the shining example. So that's a non-starter as an argument. That's an old argument that's got, you know, in my view, no legs whatsoever.
Yeah. Amy in Exonia, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm just wondering why people don't address the fact that a lot of these children that are doing these things have a lot of rage built up in them, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that people allow their kids to just torment each other growing up through school, even in college, and nothing is addressed to find a way to help them release some of this anger or to teach kids to not sit there and do this to each other.
Do what to each other?
To sit there and torment each other, yeah. Exile each other, and, you know, basically they're picking on each other to no extent that it creates such an amount of anger in them, and there's no way of releasing that anger, or they're finding a way to vent, and it seems like these children just keep turning to guns for a way to vent.
Yeah. Professor Farley?
Well, that could be. We have no clue as to what happened here, so we don't know if any of those words would apply. Tormenting and et cetera. We just don't know. Kids, you know, in other countries also, you know, torment each other and release their anger and all of that. And I think Amy is saying that the guns were a factor. The availability, the presence of weaponry was a factor. And so in some cultures, when people torment each other and so on. They don't release their anger through readily available guns. They may do it in some less harmful way.
We only have a minute to go, and we don't know exactly why this the student did what he did, but how can we cope with this kind of news that happens maybe too often, Professor Farley?
Well, we've got to keep our head. We've got to keep perspective. I think we've got to deal with guns. You know, it's just gone on, and we're making no significant progress in the gun culture. I think sharing things with others is very important, with friends and loved ones, talking things over. So, you know, and also, this is an aberrant event. It's very important to keep in mind this is an aberrant event. Schools, universities, etc. are still very safe places compared to many other locations in our society.
And, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so very much for being with us. Frank Farley, psychologist at Temple University. This is the Ideas Network.